All right. I call this meeting of the House Labor and Commerce to order, committee to order at 4:02 p.m. on Monday, May 17th, 2021. Members present are Representatives McCarty, Kaufman, Vice Chair Shragi, Nelson, and Co-Chair Fields, and myself, Representative Sponholz. We have a quorum to conduct business, plus two, as was pointed out off the record. Thanks so much to our Secretary today, Leah Fraser, who's participating remotely, and then our LAO moderator, Madison Truitt, for joining us here in the room today. Just want to remind everybody, be sure to speak into your microphone for those that are listening online, as well as helps our House record staff do good record keeping for us. We've got one item on our agenda today, and it's a hearing of HB 204. And we will first consider amendments and then take up the bill for final action. Available for questions today, we have in the room, welcome, Mr. Charles Collins, Director of the Division of Workers' Compensation. And then we've got Justin Mack, the Vice President for South Central Region of the Alaska Professional Firefighters Association. Is there any other questions from committee members before we start taking up amendments? All right. So we received three amendments to House Bill 204 for consideration today. I'm going to move amendment number one.
I'll object.
All right. So the purpose of amendment number one is to define firefighter and include folks who are volunteer firefighters or who are firefighters with municipal departments. It's my understanding, actually, that the majority of firefighters in the state of Alaska are volunteer firefighters, and we want to make sure that they're covered, and also that workers' comp does, in fact, cover volunteer firefighters. And so for that reason, that's why we've introduced this. Do you maintain your objection?
I do not maintain my objection.
All right.
I object for purposes of discussion.
Okay. Is there further?
Yes. Thank you.
Comment?
With respect to this amendment, it appears that this is already covered in other statute, and I guess it may be good at this point if I could call my staff member Matthew Harvey up, and I think Director Collins as well to participate in this discussion.
And Mr. Hardy, you want to come up? Sounds like we have a factual question about whether or not this is already covered first. So maybe we'll start with Director Collins.
For the record, Charles Collins, Director of Workers' Compensation. As to Amendment 1, AS09.65.295 has been our guarding statute on this. In the division's opinion, it already covers volunteer firefighters. In addition, from the division, we have had a number of cases where volunteers have been covered and have had no pushback from on the legal side on that.
All right, and I want to welcome Representative Snyder, who's joined us at about 4:04 p.m. We're going to take a brief at ease. Megan, you want to? All right, we are back on the record. We are going to go to Justin Mack with the Alaska Professional Firefighters. Mr. Mack, are you online?
Are you okay?
We can hear you just fine. Go ahead and introduce yourself for the record, and you want to address the amendment, Mr. Mack?
My name is Justin Mack. I'm representing the Alaska Professional Firefighters Association, approximately 500 fire and EMS professionals. Currently, the definition of firefighter does include volunteer organizations that are registered with the, I believe it's the State Fire Marshal Office. I don't know, one of the concerns in the past was just making sure that not only were municipal and volunteer firefighters covered, but also firefighters that were employed by the state. And I think there may have been a bit of a discrepancy in whether or not the actual state firefighters were covered. And this would fall on a lot of our airport firefighters who aren't necessarily employed by the municipality or volunteer. So I know that was one of the concerns, but my understanding of the current definition of firefighter is volunteers that are registered with the state are included in the legislation. The problem that you have with volunteer organizations is they fail to often meet the rest of the presumptive language, which includes some medical language and exposure language.
Representative Fields.
I have a follow-up question for Mr. Collins. Have volunteer firefighters been included as a result of case law or a result of regulations or a result of existing statutes, if you know offhand?
Through the statute, Representative Fields, or I'm sorry, through the chair, Representative Fields, at this point, we just, all I can state is with a cursory look at the case law, we've never had one taken out of workers' compensation by the meaning of firefighter. Most of the time what happens with our volunteers is unfortunately they don't meet the criteria of having all of those medical evaluations. Mm-hmm. That's the stumbling block for our volunteers, mm-hmm. whether it be the presumption or workers' comp in general.
So, mm-hmm. Madam Chair, that answer is consistent with my understanding that this is a matter of historic practice, but we would be making it very clear in statute if we were to adopt this amendment.
All right. Representative Kaufman.
Just with reference, the ASO 965295C says, in this section, firefighter means a person employed by a municipal fire department or who is a member of a volunteer fire department, mm-hmm. registered with the state fire marshal, mm-hmm. or a person registered for purposes of workers' compensation with the state fire marshal as a member of a volunteer fire department. So that sounds like the statute covers the intent of the amendment, or am I missing?
There's a second intent of the amendment, and that is to make sure that firefighters at international airports, DNR wildland firefighters are included, and individuals employed by the state fire marshal that are included. Director Collins, can you address that?
Chair Sponholz, I have nothing that I can lead you on that. To this point, we have experienced no difficulties, but as Representative Fields stated, you know, the division has no position either way.
It doesn't sound like that updating this language would cause any problems for the department in terms of administering its just sort of a clarification in statute to make sure that we're covering all of the people that are out there fighting fires. Mr. Mack, would you like to address the specific issue of adding in additional firefighters who are employees who may not be specifically referenced in the statutory definition of firefighters now?
I think, you know, from a broad perspective for the professional firefighters and just the firefighting profession in general, is we certainly ask these folks to put themselves at risk, specifically in this case for the exposure risk. And if we needed, or the legislature felt like we needed language to make sure we capture the folks we need to, we recognize that although perhaps case law does stand, I don't know that every scenario has been litigated up to this point. But if the intent of the legislature is to cover municipal, state, and volunteer organizations, then I would say that having that language in there would be appropriate.
Mm-hmm. All right. Thank you very much. Do you maintain your objection, Representative Kaufman?
Yes, I remove my objection.
All right. Is there any remaining objection?
I'm going to object just for the question of...
That's Representative McCarty.
Mm-hmm. Madam Chair.
I'm speaking in the microphone.
So, thank you. So the question at hand is whether the Section 09.65 5.65.295 is sufficient or it needs additional language to define it further. And what I'm hearing from Commissioner, is that correct?
Director.
Director? Sorry for the promotion. that it seems sufficient, and as I read it, in language that seems to duplicate in B seems to say that. So I'm wondering why not just leave the language of as the meaning given in 09.65.295, just to refer to that.
Mm-hmm. You want to take it brief at ease? All right, and we're back on the record. So we have a legal memo from Marie Marks with a legislative legal, which says that the statutes 9.65.295C, the plain language makes it clear that firefighter doesn't include firefighters employed by the state. It currently only applies to firefighters employed by a municipal fire department and certain volunteer firefighters. And I apologize, I wasn't as clear in sort of describing the original intention of the amendment when I described it earlier. So the intention was just to be absolutely crystal clear that we're talking about all firefighters in Alaska. So based on the guidance of our legislative attorney, we were introducing this amendment in order to be crystal clear. And what we're hearing from the department is that there's no intention to exclude anybody. We just wanted to be clear based on that specific comment, a specific memo from Ms. Marks dated February 5th of 2020. All right. Do you maintain your objection?
I have a question for what you said. Is that okay?
Sure.
Madam Chair. So with that, that's saying that the word state is not listed in 09.65.295, would it be appropriate just to make that statement in 295, the state firefighter along with the other municipal and volunteer, the two-word statement kind of cleans that up in that. Otherwise, 295 seems to stand out there on its own without having a correction as well as with that in this amendment.
The language as it is before you was as proposed by Marie Marks from Ledge Legal in order to be clear. So that was why we chose to go that direction.
Okay.
You maintain your objection?
I will.
Okay. All right. Can the clerk call the roll?
Representative McCarty?
No.
Representative Schrage?
Yes.
Representative Snyder?
Yes.
Representative Nelson?
Yes.
Representative Kaufman?
Yes.
Co-Chair Fields?
Yes.
Co-Chair Swanholt?
Yes.
6 yeas, 1 nay.
All right. Thank you very much. And with 6 yeas, 1 nay, amendment number 1 is adopted. Amendment number 2 is not being offered at this time. We have amendment number 3. I believe that's yours, Representative
okay,
McCarty.
Thanks. Madam Chair, I move amendment number 3.
All right, I will object for the purposes of discussion.
In amendment number three, that the discussion at the last Labor and Commerce meeting was to say who's recording the encounters of fires and carcinogenic material there. And those several members here were inquiring about that. I've contacted the New York Fire Department, LA Fire Department, Seattle Fire Department, and hearing that, and even in the testimony from Chief Benefield, that there's a recording that takes place. It wasn't clear how in-depth that recording in those large fire departments that I mentioned, mm-hmm. that it's the firefighter and the captain that records the incident of a fire and if there's carcinogenic elements that are there. Hence, putting in the language that's in Amendment Number 3, that the duty is on the firefighter as well as the department in regards to carcinogenic encounters, of which case, if that exists, that if the claim is filed, whatever span of time, that they could see that there was an encounter or encounters that took place.
All right, Representative Kaufman.
Well, there's a couple facets to this through the chair. On one level, centralized reporting is good in that it assures, maybe better assures, that there's a documentary record. Although the problem would be with it being an unfunded mandate placed on volunteer fire departments that don't have the resources to, perform this. So in that respect, if it's left with the individual firefighter, so I think that there's a problem if we run with this amendment as it's currently written, that we will put a burden upon volunteer fire departments that will have to keep these records. On the other hand, it's also some of the questioning in the prior hearing of this bill has brought up the question of how things are recorded. And it's good to have a backup. Some of the apps that were being used, they may be transient in nature. They may be available today and not available in the future. Where does that data go? How is it retained? And also, how is it verified? So what we found here in this discussion, both in the prior hearing and then with this amendment and in some discussions that occurred just immediately before coming into committee today, is that there's a challenge with how we make sure that this information is complete, accurate, and that it can be retrieved in the future, that it's durable, properly stored. And I don't claim to have that answer right now, but I think we've learned a couple of things. We can place an unfunded mandate upon volunteer fire departments that can't do it. Big fire departments, no problem. If you're a municipal fire department, you have access to a lot of record-keeping capability. But if we're down to just the personal records of an individual without some sort of department verification step in it, then that could be a concern on the other side. We have accuracy, we have durability, retention of records, the verification of those records. But there are also some post-event reports that have detailed information in them. That's a possibility, but I'll defer to the experts and see if there's any additional thoughts on how we can do this without creating a burden. Thank you.
Co-Chair Fields?
Following up on that, I wanted to ask both Ms. Winghire and Mr. Collins if they have thoughts on whether this is a good structure to ensure that we have those records, because I agree with Representative McCarty that employers, and in this case volunteer fire departments, should keep those records. Thank you.
Excuse me, through the chair, I believe for the record that was Representative Kaufman, not McCarty, with respect to the records.
I guess I was saying I agree with the intent of the amendment from Representative McCarty.
Okay, thank you.
All right, we'll start with Mr. Collins and then we'll go to Ms. Winghire.
Through the chair, Representative Fields, I think that certainly from the division's point of view, it'd be we see that as a really big burden for our volunteer firefighters that are quite often it's not their first job. Secondly, I think that this amendment may very well narrow the presumption as the in a hearing, they would be required to produce this record, which may be burdensome on them. However, to argue both sides of the same thing, in the larger fire departments, quite often, especially probably the most famous of these hearings was out of Anchorage, and there was a considerable amount of discovery done in that hearing to find, you know, what the cause of the cancer-causing injury was, mm-hmm. and that they had to use incident reports, and you know, there was quite a bit of legal time in discovery of that, so it could, for the larger departments, it probably would be a cost-saving device. So I think I've argued both sides just for you guys.
All right, thank you. Ms. Winghire?
For the record, I'm Lori Winghire, and I'm the director of the Division of Insurance for the state. And I don't know that I have a whole lot more to offer than what Director Collins did. I think there is something very good about this amendment and the fact that to meet the presumption, there needs to be a record. But I also think when you've got volunteer fire departments that are having cookie sales and bake sales to raise money, there is a cost. I don't know how much the cost is, if it's $10 a member a year or if it's thousands. And without that, I don't know how we could make a decision, if you will, as to the cost. But there's no doubt that keeping of the records is good for both the fire department and the employee, but there's a cost.
Yeah. All right. Follow-up question from Co-Chair Fields, and then I'm going to go to Mr. Mack, and then Representative Snyder.
Thank you. The only other thing I want to make sure we're not doing is unintentionally excluding someone from benefits in the event that an employer, in this case a volunteer fire department, fails to keep the records. So I want to make sure that in the event that the volunteer fire department failed to keep the records, an insurer would not be able to use that to argue, oh, we don't have to pay this because there wasn't a record, when that was the employer's and not the employee's failure. Could you address that? Should I be worried about that or not?
Through the chair, Representative Fields, I would hope that the insurance companies would not make the argument that the department, volunteer otherwise, was to keep records and failed to do so. I think that's a different argument of some, I don't want to use the word OSHA, but there's a different component there that they forgot to keep a record or they failed to keep a record. And I would not think that the failure of the department would negate the employee's claim.
Okay. Mr. Mack, would you like to comment on amendment number 3?
Yes, thank you. Through the chair, right now as it stands, the 3 sort of qualifying issues in statute for presumption is the qualifying medical exam, the 7 years of employment, exams not showing disease, and in section C, it states, demonstrates while in the course of employment as a firefighter, the firefighter was exposed to known carcinogen. It seems like from an exposure standpoint, which speaks to the presumptive language in itself, that being able to show that there was an exposure is already a criteria. To add language that says maintain a record of each exposure would certainly be a challenging thing for even a bigger municipal department, let alone a small volunteer department. We do have a national, through the U.S. Fire Administration, a national fire incident reporting system. But I guess my bigger concern is that this almost seems to go the opposite direction when it comes to presenting a presumptive claim. And that just shows that we had an exam, we didn't have cancer for the first 7 years coming in, and we were exposed throughout the course of our duties. To add the additional portion of a record of each exposure, which I think could be defined in different ways by different individuals, departments, lawyers. We can maybe all look at a different perspective of what a record of each exposure might look like. In the last 24 hours, I've been on 4 separate fires, 3 outside fires, 1 structure fire. What meets the definition of a record of each exposure? We certainly have our runs where we can just say a firefighter went to a structure and you know, went to a structure fire, and therefore we know that they were exposed to all these terrible carcinogens. So I guess that would be my concern with this language, is it might go away from the intent of presumptive language. But I will say that reporting and making sure that volunteer or municipal departments have a good standard of reporting is extremely important. And we do that for insurance reasons, for litigation reasons, and for exposure reasons. And while I do think that's important, I'm not sure this is the place for that language.
All right. Thank you. I'll give you a follow-up, and then I'm going to go to Representative Snyder, who's been waiting in the queue.
Thanks. So follow-up for Mr. Mack. I guess my assumption with this bill is that with the presumption, essentially every fire is a presumed exposure. So I guess my reading of this amendment was that every fire would be an exposure, and maybe it's not written perfectly, and maybe if not, we should revisit it. But I thought that's the whole theory of this presumption.
All right, Representative Snyder.
Thank you, Chair Sponholz. It's not the record keeping part of this amendment that gives me some pause. It's more that it's the language is fairly vague in maintaining a record and not necessarily dictating what that record should look like. One exposure is not equal to another. It changes upon carcinogen, it changes upon the duration of exposure, the frequency of exposure, the route of exposure. And my concern is by maintaining a list, it could be setting individuals up to being denied coverage if the cancer that they have is not linked to a carcinogen in their exposure list. And of course, different carcinogens are linked with different types of cancer. It's not just mm-hmm. across the board. So that gives me a little bit of pause. And if we do return to this, and it's not like radiation, you don't wear a monitor and then you run it. There's no way to track everything, and you don't necessarily know what's inside a particular building that's burning and releasing a carcinogen, so they very well could be exposed to a variety of things that there's no way necessarily to document. And I'm curious too, since we have folks on the phone, is there a reason not to also include suspected, I only just noticed this morning, suspected carcinogens as defined by OSHA? Because it's when you go to OSHA and you look at their listing and documentation of carcinogens in the work environment, they're not simply concerned with known carcinogens, but also suspected carcinogens. And I was just curious why that's not reflected in statute, if anyone knew. Mm-hmm.
Mr. Mack, did you have a comment on Representative Snyder's question about suspected carcinogens?
I will say, in reading a recent study, I believe it was out of the Midwest, and I can look up more details of it, but as they basically placed sort of military-style dog tags on firefighters that were made of silicone and sort of mimicked your skin, and they could basically get an idea of absorption. Mm-hmm. And through that process, I guess the short version of this study is they found the things they thought they were going to find, and then they found several other carcinogens that were not necessarily expected. And that comes from new chemicals, new manufacturing techniques. It's an ever-changing process, and therefore we're always going to have an increased amount of exposures. I guess the thing that we sort of understand now is there's enough known carcinogens in a vehicle fire, a building fire, a multifamily structure fire, that we know that there's a pretty toxic soup there, and just general exposure to that gives you the increased cancer risk. And then the one other thing to consider in exposure is just how we oftentimes we think of maybe inhaling or breathing it in, but the exposures we get in the fire service are not only from the structure fires we go on. We also get exposure from the very chemicals in the PPE that's designed to protect us. Inside the fire station, we have exposures to carcinogens within the station itself. So the exposure is nearly, all the time, not simply on a given run or, you know, an incident. And I think that speaks to why we need language like presumptive cancer language in state statute.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree. Representative Kaufman, do you have a question or comment?
Comment. Through the chair, I just note on page 2, line 19, it looks like, where it refers to while in the course of employment as a firefighter, the firefighter was exposed to a known carcinogen.
Could you point out the line again? Oh, I'm sorry, line 20 then.
Yeah, I guess it's okay. Line 20. And so as defined by the IARC and T, mm-hmm. Just to shorten that up a little bit.
That's catchy.
Yep. Mm-hmm. So anyway, it seems that there's a pretty good definition for exposure. Through what the International Agency Research on Cancer National Toxicology Program in the course of employment.
Mm-hmm. All right. Representative McCarty?
Through the chair, I concur exactly with that. We already have that in language of what's defining the pieces of carcinogen, and yet there's not something in there saying what's recording of those experiences of that. Comments about saying that this is done only by large fire departments is incorrect. Even the chief of the volunteer fire department in Chugiak said that the firemen are using apps to record things after every fire, that they meet to discuss what happened with that, the debriefing. So if there's, you know, known carcinogen type things, according to the standards that's already in statute, that they're listing that down. And so there's not a new burden that's put on, really, that we're just putting the statutes up to speed with what is happening already. And it actually goes to the benefit of a claim, as I have a friend whose husband died of cancer as a fireman, and he had the fight, or they had the fight, while he had cancer to get the claims. And I know a few others that are struggling with that. And so this makes it easier substantiating the experiences, helps with the claim process with workers' comp and stuff. So it is being done in small fire departments as well as in large. And with our apps that we have today, it makes it pretty easy to record.
I guess, you know, I'm going to maintain my objection. I am persuaded in for two reasons. One is that, you know, Mr. Mack said this sort of goes in, you know, this is the opposite of what is intended of the bill, which is to create a presumption of exposure, and also that Representative Kaufman's observation that this likely creates an unfunded mandate for volunteer fire departments. And I know that we frequently hear from the Alaska Municipal League with concerns about passing legislation at the state level that creates additional costs for local governments across the state, and I'm sort of reluctant to do that in this particular example, although we did hear that, you know, voluntarily people can do that, I think, and if, you know, fire departments want to make that decision locally that they want to do that, I feel like that's an appropriate local control sort of decision, but I think I'm going to maintain my objection on this one. Representative Fields.
Thanks. I guess I'll vote for the amendment. Don't know whether it'll pass or not. Whether it passes or not, I hope that we can work with Mr. Mack and make sure that we come up, and I think probably Ms. Winghire or Mr. Collins, make sure we come up with some good language on the employer's responsibility to record exposures, so that, you know, if one of these apps that was being maintained by an employee fails, that doesn't exclude them from coverage. And that's clearly the intent. Right. Just needs to be written the right way so it's not misconstrued to Mr. Mack's concern. So I think whether or not this language is perfect, I'm going to vote for it and hope that we can perfect it by the time this bill gets across the House floor.
I guess I'll just make a comment that I think that I appreciate the sentiment of you know, wanting to perfect the language. I worry that could potentially create another barrier to, you know, workers' compensation for firefighters that are being exposed to carcinogens. And if a simple record-keeping thing would get in the way of somebody's you know, workers' comp claim for breast cancer from being funded and approved, that would concerns me. That would concern me. But I appreciate the collaborative spirit of this conversation today. And with that, will the clerk call the roll?
Representative Crossman.
And the question is?
Are you going to vote for amendment number 3?
No.
Representative McCarty?
Yes.
Representative Shoggy?
Yes.
Representative Snyder?
No.
Representative Nelson?
No.
Co-Chair Fields?
Yes.
Co-Chair Sponholz?
No.
Representative Shoggy?
No.
All right, with 2 yeas and 5 nays, amendment number 3 is not adopted. Thank you to the committee for working on this and for turning this around very quickly for one of our members' bills. Is there a motion?
Yes. Madam Co-Chair, I move House
Bill. Oh, at ease. And we skipped an all-important public testimony step. So I'm going to go ahead and open up public testimony, and it looks like we've got one person on the line to testify. Ms. Lay?
Yes. Can you hear me?
We can hear you just fine. Go ahead and introduce yourself for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you so much for having me. My name is Allison Lay, and I'm calling on behalf of myself. I am opposing today this bill because the information given to the committee is incorrect. Charles Collins continues to inform the legislature that workman's comp has gone down, but fails to inform the legislature of all the unnecessary and ongoing litigation going on currently that has huge liabilities attached to it. In addition, how can this come with a zero fiscal note when Charles Collins repeatedly testified how expensive a cancer claim is, and no one on this committee questioned it? Representative Zach Fields knows full well that workman's comp does not follow Alaska Constitution. In fact, the Workman's Compensation Board uses injured workers' records to coerce them into settlement because injured workers are left with literally nothing. I also have a question. Is Justin Mack, was he on the Workman's Comp Board at one time, or is he on it now? Mr. Collins says it covers volunteer firefighters, but it has taken me 6 years, and I still can't get a hearing. I fell on ice, dislocated my ankle, and fractured it. I am forced to walk with no cartilage until who knows when. I put myself at risk helping abused children and can't even get a hearing on the merits, but workman's comp was set up to be fast, fair, and efficient. Lori Winghire also knows the tactics being used in workman's compensation, as the Supreme Court ordered an investigation. Charles Collins publicly stated in a public workman's comp meeting that insurers are not reporting on EDI reports correctly, and so the numbers that he displayed for the meeting were incorrect. Charles Collins also changes the board recommendations during the meetings to benefit individuals on the workman's comp board. Are the firefighters' records going to be made public for public inspection, or is that just for certain individuals? I have never had any pre-existing condition for my ankle, so why litigation? The workman's comp system is broken, and this is the bill we are seeing. The budget for vocational rehab is so bloated, and you can't compare that. What injured workers receive in benefits is literally pennies on the dollar. The workman's comp board is packed with union workers, HR managers, Sarah Faulkner, whose only concern is her own trust, and risk managers. My adjuster doesn't even have to answer any questions because the workman's comp board said that she didn't have to, even though they have filed 97 EDI reports in my case that has led to the Alaska Supreme Court publishing false facts about me. And that is all for my testimony.
All right. Thank you very much for your testimony today. Representative Kaufman, do you have a question?
Yes. I ask if you would please contact my office. I'd like to learn more in supporting this. I would be interested in learning more from what you have to say. Thank you.
All right, and there's nobody else available or interested in testifying today, nobody else online, nobody else in the room, so I'm going to go ahead and close public testimony All right, we're going to take two on this. Co-chair Fields.
Okay. I move House Bill 204, Work Order 32-LS0908, /A, from committee as amended with attached recommendations and fiscal notes.
Is there any objection? Seeing none, HB 204 moves from committee without objection. That wraps up our business this afternoon. I want to thank everybody for joining us. It was great having a testifier in the room today. Our next meeting is noticed for Wednesday, May 19th at 3:15 p.m. Here in Barnes 124. Noticed on the agenda, our bills previously heard are scheduled. Co-chair Fields and I will let you know what legislation, if any, we may take up on Wednesday. It's also possible this could be our last meeting. So this is the way things are in the last week of the regular session. Thanks again today to Leah Frazier, our secretary, and our LAO moderator, Madison Truitt. And this meeting of the House Labor and Commerce Committee is adjourned at 4:41. Please stick around to sign the paperwork.